Wolf Depredation Advisory Committee appointment discussion, that's maybe Dave Sykes. So, the Board of Commissioners has, there's a Wolf Depredation Committee that meets occasionally to hear and disperse, to hear issues with wolves in Morrow County and the mitigation and so forth. And I was originally appointed to that when Jeff and I first came into office in January. Roy wasn't on here, but then as we've progressed during the year and then talked to him about, he's going to attend the Wolf Symposium, yeah, in Pendleton, along with Dean Robinson, who's the chair of the committee. And, you know, and I just got to thinking, you know, he hunts all the time, he knows the Blue Mountains inside and out. You know, he's just more a logical choice for this committee. So, with that, I'm going to resign, and I'm asking the board to appoint Roy to that spot. So I think it would just work better.
Well, I'll move to appoint Rodrigo to the Wolf Depredation Advisory Committee.
I'll second it.
Do we need to have you approve Dave's resignation on there as well?
It's in, yeah, okay, in the motion, yeah. I turned the letter in.
It's here to approve, yeah, to approve Commissioner Sykes' resignation from the Wolf Depredation Committee.
Did we put that in there, or do you want to do that separately?
Well, let's do that first. Maybe we'll draw the motion, and then maybe we'll do the
rest after. A second.
There we go. Okay. That works.
So, I'm moving to accept Dave's letter of resignation from the Wolf Depredation Advisory Committee.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded to accept David Sykes' resignation from the Wolf Depredation Committee. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carried. Okay, now we'll accept.
Now I'll move to appoint Rodrigo Jr. to the Wolf Depredation Advisory Committee.
Okay, I'll second. Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carried. Okay. Okay, now we're up to the Fair Board Committee appointment request. And Sue, there you are.
Good morning. Sue Gibbs Heppner, Fair Board Manager. So I'm here today. We have two letters that were sent in. We have two appointments that finished their term the end of December, and so we have two applicants. One being Braxton Adams, which would his finish, but he put in a letter to do another term. And then the other is Cody High. His term came up. We didn't get another letter as of yesterday, but we do have a new applicant. Her name is Kira Klein, and so she is requested to be on the Fair Board.
Any questions, Sue, about these appointments? Oh.
Yeah. Well, there's one other
thing.
As of last night, we also got email with a resignation of one other board member. So we're filling in the two that finished, but then we just lost one as of last night.
Who's that?
Sarah Baker.
So we'll be anticipating posting for that today.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So we'll deal with the two that we have the applications for now. So, any questions to Sue about them? Okay. Sound like good candidates? So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Entertain a motion to appoint the appointment of these two to the Fair Board.
For approval or to appoint Kira Klein and Braxton Adams to the Morrow County Fair Board.
Here a second.
I'll second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carried. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Sue. Okay. That concludes our business item. Well,
we got one more.
Yeah, we got one more. It's under count. Fair Board. No, that'd be another county administrator meeting?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah. So we got one more to pick up on the county administrator report, and that's C, report on Board of Commission meetings.
Thank you, Board. One of the this is just a little bit of report. This wasn't asked by the commission. It was just kind of out of my curiosity. During early 2023, you as commissioners decided to meet on a twice-a-month basis rather than on a weekly basis. Just out of curiosity, I had the staff run the report on how much time you're spending in that position in Board of Commission meetings. And we compared it with the last 2 years on it. And all told, for 2023, that you held 31 Board of Commission meetings. With the total time spent in those meetings of 94 hours and 19 minutes. It flew by like a nice spring day, I'm sure. That averaged about 3 hours and 2 minutes per meeting. And if you look at 2022, there was 48 meetings. They had a total of 92 hours, 35 minutes, with an average length of 1 hour and 55 minutes. And 2021 did exceed you. It was 49 meetings with a total time of 120 hours. 10 minutes and 2 hours and 27 minutes in of average length. Interesting enough, Commissioner Weinholz shared two agendas from his late father's files, and it shows where they would start at 9 and go to like 3:30. And so as administrator, thank you for not holding those long of meetings on a regular basis. But I just wanted to point out that time spent is very comparable to the last Board of Commission's meeting four times a month. In my mind, there's also been some streamlining of procedures. That means you don't have the get up, the pledge, the consent agenda all the time, and also the reduction in reviewing expenses, which was a part of the BOC meetings of the years past. So with that little bit of streamlining and still having it twice a month, it appears that you're still dedicating just as much time as the previous Board of Commission, and it does allow time for staff and you as a commission to have other meetings and attend to other matters on those off weeks. And so at this time, if there's any question, I would just recommend that we continue on with that schedule for this year. I think it's working, though it is another one of those change items that people kind of question. But showing from here, you're putting in just as much time as the previous board, and I'm sure based on different issues that we'll be facing this year, you might break that 94-hour time pretty easily. So this doesn't include some of those public hearing sessions that were on the ASA. This is strictly Board of Commission meetings, so just to let you know on those. So I just want to report on that and have it on public time.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. Next up, we'll just go on to department reports. 8A, Community Counseling's Solutions Quarterly Report. Kimberly Lindsay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
There are three items that I sent in to review. Quickly, the first is the quarterly report on consumer feedback. So as you've seen this before, this is the most recent quarter, so you can see the feedback from Morrill County. Individuals that are being served, again, this is voluntary. We see a lot more than 20. You'll see that in one of the other reports. Most everybody is pleased with services. One person who had to wait longer than they, or we would like probably for them to be seen. Then there's other, there's comments, and then there's other feedback from other counties, other questions about that? The next one, it is an action item. So Senate Bill 529 was passed maybe 2016 or 17 in short or long session, required the local mental health authority, which as a reminder is the county commissioners, to develop a communication and response protocol for youth who die by suicide that are the ages of 24 and younger. So I understand that often you don't think about youth as being 18 to 24, but for purposes of this bill, 18 to 24 and under is defined as a youth. So you asked CCS to develop that communication protocol, which we did, and that was approved. This last year, the state expanded that to include youth who die by overdose. And this communication protocol needed to be amended, or needs to be amended. So we added the areas that are in yellow highlighting. Other than that, the language remains the same. And the last section, there is more verbiage there. We had to add language around tribe. And then we just decided that we wanted to consolidate it a little bit, but I don't think that you're going to see that there's much change there. I included the appendix. That's the reporting that needs to occur to the state. The committee has been meeting for any death that occurred by suicide. 24 and younger, we've met all of the timelines. Good group that gathers, and I think good postvention response. So I don't know if you have any questions or concerns, if you'd like more time to review this. If not, we'd be looking for a motion to keep the county in compliance with the updated rule. Scott, you.
Okay. You're asking for a motion? We don't have a cover sheet on.
Yeah, my recommendation may be we can put something up for the 17th, unless it's more time sensitive. Only possibly reason being, we have to ask the department report, so if someone looking at the agenda might have saw this as that, we can create a cover sheet for it here and get this for the 17th if that works for the board, if that works also still.
Does that work for you?
Yep.
Okay. That way we'll keep it, it should be under business items, that way everybody knows.
We'll get that. Yeah.
With a cover sheet, just to keep it clean.
Sounds good.
All right. I appreciate your work in getting the update and making sure we're staying in compliance.
Yes.
Yeah, I went through this report. It's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions? Kimberly?
The last document is the enrollment data. The advisory board does review this, but I think it's nice for you to see periodically the number of people that we are serving. So you have the data for Morrow County. And I've explained before that the chemical dependency numbers, they have decreased significantly. That's due to Measure 110. So hopefully there'll be some changes with Measure 110. Otherwise, we are busy. Do we have time for just a couple of other quick items? So just a friendly reminder that Morrow County, well, CCS received on behalf of Morrow County about $1 million to purchase housing for individuals that have behavioral health issues. So we have until December 31st of 2024 to do that. We will be actively looking at that here in the next couple of months. Looking in our proposal, we didn't identify any places, just to be clear, but we thought that it would be most appropriate to have one in Boardman, one in Irrigan, and one in South Morrow County somewhere. This could be a little controversial. These are Morrow County dollars that we received. So I wanted to see if you had any input on the process that we use to identify potential properties and how involved you would like to be.
Just curiosity, something like that. What process did you use when you relocated your building? can happen. Did you go through any kind of public hearing or anything like that? No.
No, we did with Lakeview Heights. That one had a little bit more conversation because it was residential, and this will
be residential. What about the process? Do you remember the process that was used on that? I remember being there, but I don't remember exactly the details.
For our outpatient building up there? Yes. We identified the property, and then we held a public meeting and gathered input. The CCS Board of Directors was there. We did vote during the meeting to see what the community thought about it. And my recollection is that, I mean, and I feel like my recollection is good because there's nothing like sitting in the hot seat for a little while and wondering what's going to happen, but they voted, and there were about 50 people there. There were two that were opposed and 48 that voted in favor. And then from there, it just continued to move forward.
Remember, you gave tours of a similar one because I went on it. Mm-hmm. What was that? Was that? Anyway.
We did tours up there after it was built, before it was open.
Yeah, it was the tours of another place. Anyway, that's right. Your material. But so, are you thinking something? What do you think? Do you think something like that? How many properties do you think you're going to buy?
Well, probably three. Well, what we put in, what we proposed was three. It doesn't have to be three. We're looking at homes. If it was a duplex, it could be two single-family units, but if it's a home, likely it would just be a one family living there. You could theoretically rent out individual rooms, but that's problematic sometimes. You know, that might not work. So three homes, two to three bedrooms, could be an individual that's living there, could be a family that's living there that are in recovery. This is behavioral health, so it's not addictions only or mental health only. Individuals that are in recovery for both. In recovery is a little bit, you know, that is clearly defined on the addiction side. Somebody who is no longer using alcohol or drugs and they're engaged in treatment, actively working towards their betterment. On the mental health side, it would be somebody who's struggling with depression or anxiety or whatever, actively engaging in treatment, wanting to make changes.
No, the process to purchase one would be, it's county money.
Well, it's CCS money. It just came to...
To the county.
No, it came to CCS, but okay. It's for Morrow County use, right. To be spent in Morrow County.
Yeah, we're going to have our name on it, though. Do we have to?
I don't think that you're going to have your name on it. I actually think that they sent it directly to CCS, but I identify it as Morrow County funds. And if the commissioners were to say, I don't think we want to accept this money, I would talk with my board about it. We'd likely send it back.
No, I'm not trying to get that far into it. I mean, well, you see where we're at with these kind of things. So what do you think? Should you just go do it? Should you engage the public? What's your thoughts on each property? I mean, you buy three properties, you're going to have three. If you decide to go that route with the public, engage the public, are you going to have three different hearings? Or what's your thoughts on that?
You know, I've had different experiences that with processes, and I haven't found one that's a great way. So the CCS Board of Directors has said, if the citizens of the county or the city or the area don't want it, then we're not going to cite it there. So we're interested in relationships.
How are you going to determine that?
Right. So that I'm getting there. Okay. We've done this in a few other counties before, and what I found is that you could do one process in one county and it works splendidly, and you replicate that and you get feedback. So sometimes folks get frustrated because you don't have a meeting first and alert them before you have property. Some folks get frustrated that you don't have the property identified first. And so I wanted to gather your input. What I think is better is to identify a piece of property that's going to potentially work, then hold a public meeting to gather input on whether or not the they're okay or not okay with that. And what we have done is we've done an earnest money agreement with the owner that's been conditional upon board of directors approval and a public meeting. And we've also went door to door to the residents that are in the area, not like the whole town, but maybe a half mile radius, and provided them with information prior to the public meeting so that the most, those that could be most concerned will show up.
So if you're talking South County, Boardman, Irrigan, I assume that if it's in the city limits, you're going to also go to the city council with the same.
We can. There, one city council said, well, you're welcome to come, but we'll come to your city council, we'll come to your meeting, and then if we want to have a city council meeting, we'll let you know. But if you don't, yeah, I mean, I could reach out to them.
Well, yeah. I want to get my thought on it, because if we're going to give her input on how to run it, you know, then we're taking ownership of it.
Well, I don't know about how to run it. I'm just wondering what your thoughts, if you have any thoughts on
that's what I'm saying. If we get, if we tell you that and we become part of the process and you saw what's going on now, and so we just have to be real cognizant of, you know, so if you're going to do it on your own, I don't think we should give you any input at all on how to do it. That would be you, and it's your project completely. If you want our input, then, you know, if you want our input and our thoughts on how to do it, I think we need to have some more discussion on what we want to do based on, you were sitting here, you know how it is. So does that make sense?
It does. I would just say that I understand the position that you're in. I think that this is a county resource. And I think that we are your designated community mental health program, and it would be nice to know your thoughts on locations as opposed to being hung out to dry or not knowing what your thoughts were on the process or hearing after the fact that you didn't like the process,
Yeah, let me just make one more comment because it relates to what she just said. I don't disagree. You're a great asset for our community. I just want to get the process set ahead of time about who's involved. You see what I mean? So so we don't, you know, because we're having experience somewhat, and we might have some thoughts and input on how we want this to be handled, see, based on what we've already got. That's all. I'm not disputing it's a good or bad program. I'm just talking about the process and who's making the decision or giving input on the decision. Then we become part of it. Then I think we should have input on the process. I'm not talking about how good or whether or not it's good or bad. Okay. That's
all. Hey, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Do these kind of projects usually need a conditional use permit? Does it go to a public hearing on there? Are they generally pretty smooth with the cities?
It depends upon what the zoning is.
Okay.
It's residential. You know, okay. We're not talking about a commercial facility. Mm-hmm. The way we would be like in Boardman with the kids residential program, mm-hmm. that's, I mean, it's residential, but that's 14 beds, whereas this is, we need this to be zoned residential.
But more like
single or multi-family, yeah. So.
Okay, so, all right.
Typically no conditional use permit.
Okay.
So I guess a clarifying question for at least my mind. So state money that's coming to your entity to be spent in Morrill County. Mm-hmm. So really, I think to some of what Dave was getting to is that it's really not the county's money, it's your money to be spent in the county, just the same as you could get money to be spent in Dillon County or Wheeler County,
That, yeah, that's all true, but we get the money because we're your community member.
Sure, sure. And then, you know, then this is, I guess, maybe getting to what you're asking. You know, my thoughts on it is that I can understand some people's, you know, maybe hesitancy because of the perceived image of, you know, somebody. But you have no control of who moves in next to you. Normally, it's just that in this instance, fortunately, they've sought out your services and are trying to get better, whatever that is. I mean, you have no control if the person next door to you is a meth head or if they're in severe depression. So, you know, fortunately, if yours, you know, if you purchase a house and put somebody in there, it's somebody that's trying to better themselves as opposed to the guy next door that isn't trying and is maybe cooking. You know, so I see it as a better than, because like I say, you have no control of who moves in next to you when someone buys a house or rents a house. But I do understand the public perception. But that's my two cents on it, but I don't know that I helped you any.
If the county doesn't have any input in their process, that's fine. I just wanted to see if you did have any input on the process that we use before we, and not get too far out in front of ourselves, and don't want there to be any surprises. No. I don't want you to come back and say, oh, I didn't know anything about this, or why did you do it this way?
No, I think that you're coming in and letting us know that you're doing this, and you know, it does put it out there in the public that this could be happening, you know, and, you know, I think that we have said all along that, you know, none of the departments or any of our partners, you know, like you, that we want to micromanage and tell you how to do the process, you know, and just give you guidance as to, you know, do, you know, the political, the temperature, everything that's going on in the county, to use your best judgment of what you think would work best. Again, that's my two cents.
And I would just thank you for being transparent and coming to us. And from my position, we trust what you do, right? So we believe that you probably have a better conception of what you need to do. So we're relying on you and trusting you to do, you know, to do your job in theory. So.
Okay. Okay, so closely related, I've given a couple of updates on this. There's what we call the bunkhouse. It is a two-bedroom home located next to Columbia River Ranch on the same set of property in Boardman, Columbia River Ranch. I'm probably familiar, possibly familiar with it, on the south end of Boardman in city limits. I can't remember the road.
Corner of Main and Coonsie.
It's a little Carlson Main house.
Yeah, so Betts, former Betts house. So we wrote a grant, received funding to update that home, remodel it. It hadn't been used for a number of years. The remodel is complete. We will be moving in the first resident in the next month or so. So that is for two residents. There are two individuals that will be sharing that home. And yeah, so it's additional housing that's desperately needed in Morrow County. And then last but not least, this is just a fun thing. Our clinical director received a call from somebody with the Oregon Community Foundation. And we just wanted to talk about what we were doing, what was working well, not working so well. Challenges were in Morrow County. Nice phone call. And a few days later, I received this email letting us know that they were gifting us $50,000 to use however we saw fit, that they'd made a number of cold calls to female health programs. They were really impressed by what CCS was doing. They decided to give us some funding. I think they funded others. It was a nice surprise. So we are using it to upgrade our electronic health record and provide some advanced communications and update our payment portal so that it'll be nicer for our customers, easier process for our customers to engage, schedule appointments, make payments, that kind of thing. So,
great.
Nice. Thanks.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Kelly.
Yep. Have a good day.
You too. Have a good year.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, next up is our district attorney's quarterly report.
Thank you. So I'll start out by saying it has been, I'll say an uptick in the cases coming in. I mean, and I guess it's how I relate. I don't usually give like the set numbers, but I know when I wake up every morning, as you look up for an email, we call it our in custody list. That's anyone who's been arrested from the day before. For the criminal cases, you have to have it reviewed. Within 36 hours, the person's released. And so that's a time crunch. Sometimes you hear me, right, hear me, but I'm seeing busy in the morning. It's because I have about an hour or two to get those reviewed, filed, gather the documents from law enforcement before the court cuts that time off. And so notice that with those emails, we've been having quite a few custodies more. You have several folks for different crimes. Does anyone stand out more than others? No. I can't say like, oh, we have a rash of a whole bunch of drug driving cases. No. I can say that I see, you know, Morrow County Sheriff's Office and Boardman, you're really, really investigating those cases. Like, so watch out, I guess, for everyone listening in the communities, those are definitely being handled and prosecuted and charged. So people for drunk driving, quite a those being picked up. But you'll see the assaults, even more serious types of cases still coming through. We'll see those in the mornings. And so I was actually more surprised this morning when I saw an email saying there were no new in custodies for new arrests. I think there's a probation detention, but that was all. The other thing that's come up here recently is the retirement of one of our judges. Circuit Court Judge. So again, here in Morrow County, we have our Justice of the Peace for Justice Court that handles all of our misdemeanor cases. And then our Circuit Court, which handles all, also misdemeanor, but all the felony charges. The Circuit Court is made up of Morrow and Umatilla counties. We're considered the 6th Judicial District. So when you vote for a judge, both Umatilla and Morrow County votes for the Circuit Court judges. Currently, all the Circuit Court judges are in either Hermiston or Pendleton. There are none full-time in Morrow County. We have two in Hermiston and then three in Pendleton. Judge Brower was a judge. He was over at Pendleton. He was a district attorney there for a while, public defender, and then a judge for, 18 years now in our circuit court. He retired just the end of this year, and he's now a senior judge. Judges get different, like, they get different benefits. Like, if you work for 5 years as a retired judge, they kind of fill in when needed. You get these benefits. So he's retired, but he's still serving in his courtroom because there hasn't been someone to fill his spot yet. So just more as information for you that we had, there are four local attorneys, well, local as in Morrow, Umatilla counties, who submitted applications for the appointment. This appointment is done by the governor to fill this position. Those would be attorneys John Ballard, Jameson Hayes, Jill Wygant, and Joanna Maricos. I can't pronounce the last name very well. And so I think they're being interviewed this week. I'll say the one thing is I don't know whether the governor's going to appoint someone right away or not. You know, I'm sure Judge Hill, presiding judge, would love to have someone ready to go starting at the beginning this year. There's a lot of few cases that are a little bit, you have a senior judge, but really have somebody full-time in the courtroom. The honest issue, though, is this judge position was actually open for election already. Like, this spot is, this term for Judge Brower is going to end this year. And so the primary for that seat is in May. And so I'm questioning whether the governor is going to think, well, do I wait until May, have Judge Brower or some other judges fill that spot, see who wins the primary, and then do it. Or she may appoint someone. I don't know, though. There's not, she's interviewing people, but I can't say how long it's going to take. So for right now, though, we still have Senior Judge Brower filling that role. And there may be a new judge, but whoever that judge is will have to be running for the office. And that position's already open, and three of those four have already filed to run. And I'll say I think John Ballard filed right away before the appointment thing or anything else happened, or retirement. As we mentioned, we have a new deputy district attorney starting on January 16th. I thought it was the 15th, and I was nicely reminded that that's a holiday, Justin. You can't make people come in on the holiday. I said, okay, the 16th, that's true. And so he starts on the 16th. He'll be in Hettner, probably starting out, just kind of get a feel for it, but primarily using the office of North in the county. It's worked out really well. Like when Zach was there, you know, having close to law enforcement, with the sheriff's office in the same building, but also Boardman PD right there. That works out good. So that'll probably still be his primary office. It's a great office up there. And the, you know, Deputy DA a lot of times will also handle Justice Court. You're right next to Justice Court, so it works out pretty well right there. Other updates, preparing, I guess, for court staff. Not court staff, but county staff, is that currently there's a trial that's scheduled to go from February 12th to March 1st. It's a homicide trial involving Caleb Beeler. So you never know for sure whether those are going to go. I know they have motion. We have motion hearing set for January 18th, but they could, the dates could change. But currently, that I'm showing February 12th to March 1st. And if you've ever gone through for jury selection for the first few days, you know how our parking lot is completely full. And particularly on a case like this, I'm not sure exactly how they're going to do the jury selection, but it could make the parking a little bit difficult, depending on. And either way, with a panel that size, you'll have probably 14 jurors. We still have two alternates at least. So that's just going to fill the parking lot up a little bit more than usual. So I'll keep you up to date. A lot of times I try to send emails out to particularly county staff here in the two buildings just to let them know, hey, they might be busy for parking.
Does that encompass any of the BOC meetings? It shouldn't, right?
At
the second half?
Yeah, probably not, right? I think because that's... It seems like I'm maybe not.
If it did, we'd be up in here again.
Yeah. On that one. So yeah, I think you're right. It shouldn't affect any of the board commissioners.
Right, that's it. We should be in here again on the second half. So
that works out.
We won't have to trade like we did the one time you had. So I just want to be ahead of that.
Yeah, that's one of the issues that we'll see, particularly with spacing issues, is that this room is used for jury selection processes. They are here because there is not a sufficient room over in the courtroom. I encourage anyone who wants to see it to go back to the jury room over there. It got smaller when we actually put in the clock mechanism. They actually, you'll see where it builds out. That space suddenly got smaller. Yeah, we don't even do our grand jury. We used to kind of hold grand jury and have the grand jurors in there, but even seven people was a little bit tight for witnesses, and so we actually hold our grand jury in the courtroom now because the space is pretty small for that. And so particularly when you bring, you know, you have 14 people, it's a tight fit, but even with jury selection, it fills this room up pretty full. So this room gets used quite a bit by the court for any trials. The other update, I guess, more community is, we've seen an uptick recently a little bit in some of our mental commitments. Mental commitment is a individual based upon mental disease or defect, is either unable to care for their own basic needs, a harm to self, or harm to others. Basically, you have a mental illness that's causing pretty serious chance of harm to self, harm to others, whereas you can't take care of your basic needs. Recently, I have seen more of an uptick. I consider that a good thing, because that's really CCS and our reaching out and looking into those cases to Community Counseling Solutions. The people have always been there. There are folks who have this. By having the cases come before us, we can then help get that treatment that's needed. We've done, through these commitments, we've also tried to convert criminal cases into civil commitments. A person might, you know, have disorderly conduct, yelling in the street, be arrested for that. Well, instead of trying to put a person on probation, which is all you would get for disorderly conduct, for conditions they want to comply with because they're not in the right state of mind, we can do a civil commitment, at least get 6 months where they are, you know, maybe are placed in a facility or they're at home. Like, I have a case coming up soon where a person was placed on a trial visit to home, but they're not complying with the trial visit. And so they might get revoked and moved to a higher level of care, like Lakeview Heights, like we used to have in John Bay's Aidview, other facilities. The biggest issue I think we're dealing with right now, if it ever comes up in the legislature, we're used commissioners, would be getting more facilities, more placements. Because that's the biggest issue I've seen recently with our mental health, is a person is placed on a mental commitment, and usually we have to have the hearing within 5 days. And I'm used to, a lot of times, a person will go to the hospital to get what's called a medical clearance. They get cleared, make sure there's not any drugs in their system, stuff like that. Then they get placed in a facility before that hearing, a mental health treatment facility. Recently, my cases have been where the person is still in the ER 5 or 7 days later when we have the hearing. They're transported from the ER still to the, and not because they're still a medical issue, it's because there's no placement for them. And of course, the ER is still better than the jail, but still, that's an issue. Trying to find more facilities for mental health, because we can get the commitment, we can get those things, we need to have the services available to treat them with them. I guess the last thing I'll end with is what stood out to me was cases. Technology is a benefit sometimes. We might hate it, but what I've been seeing with home security cameras has been really helpful for cases. I just had grand jury yesterday, did an orientation, and the two cases we had actually had great surveillance from one business and then another from a homeowner. Where you see the person break into the house, and they just saw a small camera, and we saw the video in the picture. So even though a lot of our cases, you could say, oh, I think it's so-and-so, or they admitted to it, or the homeowner says, oh, I saw Jimmy do it. If you can say, well, here he is on the camera. And they are fantastic. And so just if you haven't thought about getting it sometime, do it. We've definitely had cases solved and property returned, because people can get caught pretty quick before they have a chance to sell it. And this last recent case, the item that was taken, it was a smaller item, but it got returned still. And that's what we need. So that's pretty much all I wanted to add in, just a little bit, some tidbits we've been up to.
Any questions, Justin?
No.
Thank you, Justin.
Thanks, Justin. Okay, next up will be Public Works Monthly Report. Eric, I'll be right back. I might get called unless everybody wants to break. I'll be right back, Ryan. Okay.
Thank you, Commissioners. For the month of December, went really, really quick. Don't have anything to report on airport and facilities, really nothing of significance unless you have questions. Welcome those. For the roads, they're still out shouldering paved roads that we've paved the last 2 years, trying to catch up on that. And then blade operators are out. This has been a very good fall and winter for blading, so we're out hitting those hard and applying rock where needed. I do want to report that I'm currently working on our bridge inventory list. Hope to present something to you guys next month as far as the priority of significant maintenance and repairs. Administrator Matt and I talked about including Anderson Perry with help with that, because it's pretty dire, and we will do that in the near future. I have applied with the help of Anderson Perry for a local bridge project funding grant that includes replacing a failing bridge on Clark's Canyon out of Lexington there that crosses Willow Creek. That is hopefully approved. It's a 10.27% match. The quote came in about $670,000. Our match would be about $69,000. It's not going to happen in 2024, so I won't budget for it this fiscal year unless it's recommended that I do. If it's awarded, the work won't be done. We'll talk later. So there's funny. There's talk to talk about. We will make sure we budget properly.
Stop digging right there.
That particular bridge is a 40-foot bridge. It was recommended to bring it out to 60-foot where the pilings would be, get it away from the creek, drive the pilings, and a concrete bridge. 30 feet wide rather than, I don't know, 21, where it's at now. The other application that was turned in to the local bridge project was on Ray Creek. I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with that bridge that crossed go up Mortar Lane to the dairy, is load rated and constantly heavy trucks crossing that. So we applied for repairs on that as well. I gave you bad info. The Ray Creek repairs that I just described on Mortar is the $669,000 for the repairs to get the load ratings removed. The Clark's Canyon Bridge replacement is $1.7 million. Okay, that's the quote for that.
And that is still a 10.2?
Yes, yep. Around $175,000 would be our match.
Yes.
Yes, which Kevin and I will work on to make sure it's properly budgeted for. Yeah, so I'm hoping, especially for Clark's Canyon, that's been on the list for a couple of years, and I'm hoping it gets a little easier. Needs to get replaced. For solid waste, Sandy and I have been working on upgrades, upgrade proposals for both transfer stations, especially for scales, and that's something that we've been working on, well, dreaming about for the last 5 years, really working hard to get some quotes so that we can budget for some scales, which will really help. Right now, currently, the fees are based on volume, and it's very inconsistent. And also, we pay on tonnage when we deliver, so it'd be really, really great to get some scales on both of those for transparency, and also to have scale tickets to compare to revenues.
So North Transfer has a scale site in front. There's no, the triple beams aren't there, the electrons aren't there.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
That's fine.
Yep. And then the one company that's responded that will be coming out to look at that project is very confident that we can use what's there. I just need better technology for the actual scale components. Yes. And then at the South Transfer, we're talking about, well, my vision, waiting for them to show up, is to build one above ground level, which is the cheapest way, like you see at Grand Rovers and most places. Just, yeah. So we're working on that, and also, in addition to that, some new scale houses, rather than those small A-frames that we have. Also, we're working on improved recycling opportunities for the Lexington area. Boardman's taken care of well in the city, so is Irrigan. We have a site here in Heppner for recycling. We'd like to get one in Lexington on county property that would take care of Ione and Lex and help the businesses recycle better. So we're working on that as well.
It's a full scale fleet. You have glass, cardboard.
Yeah, so we right now have recycling for, I'm going to mess it up so I don't want to speculate, but we have, you know, the bin in Lexington at the transfer station that's only open Saturday, Sunday, where we can put stuff in. It's difficult to get cardboard in there. We're looking at an open top bin like we have at the North Transfer Station where you just break it down, throw it in. That's what we're looking at, something a little easier. and parks, as I reported last month, they are closed, and crew members are just up there doing their regular off-season maintenance on their facilities up there.
Not much snow, so they're hopefully getting more done.
They are. They're not out trying to plow their way into work. They're actually in there getting quite a bit of work done. However, might not think about it, it would be nice if it was frozen so that we're not getting stuck out there. You know, certain maintenance is not getting done on the trails because we can't get there. But on the facilities, the building facilities, we're getting lots of work done. So, yeah, that's what I have, unless there's further questions. Okay.
Well, let's see, all the parks are closed. Yeah. I know at one point you were... We had asked, we were just thinking maybe sometime you might put together some figures on what the parks are doing compared to last year. I know COVID was behind, but I mean, if that's too hard, we don't.
It's not, we got it. It's
just a curiosity.
Every park had a 5% increase from the year prior.
Okay.
On average, each park was up 5%.
Yes, park.
All three.
Okay.
Which I expected after the COVID era, we'll call it, that it would have gone down because, you know, Washington was closed. We got a huge influx of people coming this way. And I was surprised to see it was an increase.
Yeah.
They like it.
Yeah. Well, they found us and they're coming back.
Yeah. So.
Things went pretty smooth at the OHV this year, or was there glitches and problems? You had this food vendor or franchise that worked out okay.
It did. This year was good. It was good. Not any major malfunction. You know, there was no fire, which caused some issues in years past.
Right,
so that's helpful.
Right, right.
Everything went real well. The parks this year.
Good.
Yeah. Look forward to this next year coming.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Commissioners.
Yep. Okay, next up is Sheriff's Office Monthly Report. And I'm thinking it's going to be a sheriff in person. Yeah. Both.
Good morning, Commissioners.
Hello.
Happy New Year.
Yeah.
I'm John Bowles, Moore County Sheriff. You have our information report, and I just got some talking points I'll go over. In our patrol division, we recently hired Ryan Freeland and Nick Berg for patrol deputy positions. Ryan's new to law enforcement, and Nick Berg is a lateral. So we're real happy about that. So Nick, he'll be in a much shorter training. He'll just kind of get familiar with our processes and how things work in our area, and he'll be on his own, I'm thinking, probably within a month or two. So that's good. And so currently in patrol, in the patrol division, we have one patrol deputy position and one sergeant position open. And I'm hoping to have that sergeant position filled pretty soon. Hopefully in the next couple weeks, that's what I'm looking at right now. We've been a little short-handed in patrol with those two openings, and we currently have two that are going to graduate from the academy at the end of this month. So due to those reasons right there, we've been a little short-handed. As a result of that, my supervisory staff and I, we've had to be flexible and adjust our schedules, working shifts, taking calls, just doing whatever needs to be done to get things covered. One of the examples that my undersheriff, Brian Snyder, is currently out doing some FTO, that's field training officer work, with one of our newer deputies. So having that staff that's willing to be flexible and work together to get whatever needs to be done, that's, I'm really happy with that. That makes my life a lot easier and less stressful. So this morning we completed a safety walkthrough at the hospital. So this involves an email hoax that was sent out. And based on the FBI's recommendation, I don't want to give this too much attention, but it was some information that was sent out to a lot of hospitals and schools in Oregon. And the FBI followed up on it and found it to be a hoax and not a legitimate threat. But we wanted to make sure, so we walked through the hospital here and just make sure that everything was secure and safe, and it was. And we did that this morning. In PMP, in parole probation, we recently hired Andrea Garcia. Andrea was with our dispatch for over 5 years. She's a bilingual employee, does a great job. So she'll do a great job in the parole probation division. And she'll be attending the Parole Probation Academy just as soon as we can get her registered. The academy, just like everybody else, is busy, so getting them in there sometimes takes a little time. We still have the work crew lead position open, and unfortunately we haven't received any applications for that, but we're still updating the job posting, trying to get applicants for that. But like I said, unfortunately we haven't received any applications for that. Gina and Curtis have done a great job covering the population while they've been one person down. So having Andrea on board is going to be a really good benefit for them. But overall, PMP is running well. Like I said, they're doing a great job. And Gina, in her newer leadership position, she's doing a really good job. I'm really pleased with her work. In dispatch, we've had one employee that unfortunately had to resign due to some medical issues. And of course, Andrea, she transferred to prone probation. So we currently have two openings in dispatch, and we have job postings out for those, and we'll be accepting applications for that. So in our dispatch, you know, we have a very good training program and well-trained staff, and so that makes it easier when we're short-handed to get things covered and make sure that the quality of service is still there.
I got a question. How long does it take to get a person, say a person walks in there, they're a good-looking candidate, but they have no experience in dispatch. I mean, you'll consider them, right?
Yes.
Okay, how long does it take to get them up to speed when they can work on their own, so to speak?
It could be 6 months to a year, depending on how fast they catch on. It takes time. You know, I've heard other agencies, they might throw somebody out there sooner, but I don't like to do that. I want to make sure that they're quality trained, and we're going to provide a good quality service before we put them out there on their own. I mean, for the public's safety and for that employee's safety and well-being. So, getting those dispatcher positions is a difficult task because that's a really stressful position. If anybody's worked that position, know anything about dispatch. It's a really stressful job that you wouldn't think of so much, but they're kind of behind the scenes and they handle everything that comes in. So, and I see that across the board. Like when I go to the state meetings with other sheriff's offices, everybody is short in dispatch, and some of them are extremely short. Some of them, I don't even know how they're even keeping the dispatches running, but we've been pretty lucky. In our civil division, it's been business as usual, handling civil concealed handgun license and records. We're still seeing a good number of concealed handgun license applications come in. I know that because I have to review them all and approve or deny them when they come in. And in civil as well, we have a good trained, experienced staff, so that really helps out. I don't have to worry a whole lot about that division because they do a great job and take care of things. In emergency management, Steve, he's doing a great job. He's always willing to help, you know, step in there and help out where needed. I mean, for example, he helped us out this morning on the safety walkthrough at the hospital. So, you know, other than that, overall, things are running well. It's been busy a little bit. We've seen a little bit more cases come in. And I think historically might be around the holiday season, we see a little uptick in things. But like Justin said, I can't say it's, you know, we're seeing a huge increase of DUIs or thefts or assaults. It's just everything's just kind of up a little bit. And so when we're busy, Justin's busy. So
or if he's busy, you're busy.
Right, same in that cases. But we appreciate everything Justin does. So okay. Other than that, that's all I have unless there's any questions.
Any other questions?
No questions. Good report. Thank you.
Yeah. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Have a good day.
Okay. Oh, and then there's the treasurer's report. I talked to Jaylene yesterday, and we moved it to 117. And just the agenda was already published.
Okay.
Then the fair quarter reports, I guess.
Yeah. Well, hello again.
Yeah, you're back.
Yeah, I'm back. So I think the last time I came, I gave a review, I think in October, as a review of auction and all that. So in November, we approved to have Challenge of the Champions back, which is a bull riding event. So this is scheduled for March 16th, which is St. Patty's weekend. The contracts were signed and sponsor forms have gone out, and I was happy to see they're coming back in, so nice. That's really nice. It was voted, I think, about the only change. It was voted to have the after party in the Wilkins Arena for weather purposes. For I think that'll be a good move. We're talking about possibly running like propane heaters to keep things a little warmer, and so that would be a pleasant change, I believe. So that's just on the beginning stages. We'll talk about that more next month, so or this month actually. We did have an approval of new rental rates that have increased with increased costs. They are similar, but just bumped up slightly. So for example, the annex typically for a full day rental is $165 to rent that area with the kitchen and tables and stuff. $100 of that is just a damage deposit, but we are upping that to $175. So just small increases, making it more rounded numbers. And then breaking out things like tables and chairs, we still rent those. For the most part, you could rent one chair or 100 chairs for $20, didn't matter. So we've broke those out now to groups of like 1 to 20, 21 to 50, or 50, things like that. So not huge, but I think it keeps up with rising costs things. So And I did send in an attachment that shows those slight changes. We have, it was moved and seconded to revamp our sponsorships this year. Not a huge change, but I think it will be a positive change. One of the things that I wanted to do was to see an increase in entries. Over the years, entries have been dropping. And so to do that, when I had a superintendent's meeting, and we talked about that, why is it dropping? And I think a lot of it is the lack of kids being brought up to make things and enter things into the fair. And so one of the things that was also brought up is there's not a lot of incentive to put things in the fair. So came up with an idea for our sponsorships. Instead of having, we have like gold, silver, bronze, things like that. And a bronze sponsorship, I think, is $350. Instead of doing that, we've decided to replace it with a department sponsorship. So someone can sponsor that, but part of that sponsorship goes to a cash award as a way to help people give a little more incentive. So instead of having the most beautiful Grand Champion quilt, now there'll be a $50 award that will go towards that. So we're calling that a department sponsorship. 200 will sponsor the banner, 50 will go to an award. So that's our way of trying to increase improvement. And we'll do some advertising so that people know about that. This will, we'll have another meeting next month with our superintendents. One of the other things that we wanted to do is just get more community involvement. So I started a theme contest. So I went to all the schools in Morrill County, and the kids got together, each class, and submitted a theme for the fair. And so typically we haven't had a theme for the fair till June or so, and I wanted to have one by the new year, so that happened. So I'm happy to announce our theme for this year's fair is Admiration for Generations. So that was by IOM fifth graders. I thought it was a cool one. So we're going to now take that, and that will be our winner or our theme, and then we will put it into an art contest to have kids sixth grade and older try to make an art picture, I guess, that would be turned into a coloring page, but that will match that theme. And so that'll be another contest, and then once we have a picture, that will be turned into a coloring page and redistributed out before fair is over. So again, just a way to get the community involved and get that theme out there a little quicker. So that's what I've been busy on, and hopefully next week the coloring sheet contest will be out now that we have our theme. Mm-hmm. So let's see. And so, of course, we were working on filling the two positions for our board, and I do believe that sums it up. We'll be working on Challenge of the Champions and developing and getting our sponsors out this month and next month. So, yeah, any questions?
Question, Sue?
One question, just, you know, we're glad that we got somebody there just in charge of the fair and moving forward and getting things taken care of ahead of time. So
and still working on things with remodel. We've had improvements to the design, and I think we have a really nice, we got some involvement from leaders and other people that came in and gave, you know, some advice, and I think that went well. I'm real happy with what we have so far. So
good.
Yeah.
Well, we appreciate your innovation, too. You always
thank you.
That's nice.
Yeah, well.
Change it up a little bit.
Sometimes. Yeah. It's good. Well, but like you say, change is hard sometimes,
it is
too.
Hard,
so.
Yeah. That's good.
We'll see how that goes.
All right.
Well, thank you very
much.
Thank
you very much. Yeah. See you. Okay, that concludes, department reports. Correspondence? Is there any correspondence going?
Nope. No.
Mission reports. Jeff,
nothing since last time. Thank you.
No, I did do the East Oregon count counties Monday or Tuesday morning at 7 a.m. with Senator Finley. Had some good information. We'll be doing that on a regular basis. I think they do that every other Tuesday through. It's for the legislative short session. Good information on there. Had a pretty good turnout with commissioners. Not such a good turnout with legislation. So there was only two legislators that made it. But lots of information, and if you can jump on, it's worth doing. So.
What about the ALC? Did you decide to do
anything on that? I replied to Valerie, and I don't know where we went from there.
The ALC was looking for a legislative appointment.
Yeah, and I thought that you'd said you wanted to.
I referred it on to him.
Oh, okay.
And I did send you an email saying that something we should do, and if somebody was interested in it, I was good with that, but if nobody else was interested, I would take that on.
Okay.
Sounds like he stepped right up to the plate.
Yeah.
Hey, he was doing good back on that meeting, guy. Yeah, he was good after people. Wow. Impressive.
The legislation's, the AOC legislator's pretty. And anybody, just so you guys know, you can always go and be a voting member. You don't have to be assigned or anything.
Yeah.
Everybody is a voting member, and you just have to show up. So
it's important, you know. I mean, it's like our circuit board building. You know, we have that.
Yep.
Yeah, and kind of keep in touch. And the AOC they're good, especially when you let them know what you want. You know, mm-hmm. they're on top of it. So let's see, what do I got right? I don't have a lot. I think Wyden's having a town hall tomorrow. Right, Thursday, in Boardman.
In Boardman.
Yeah.
In the morning.
You going to that? 9 a.m.? I'm going to, I think. Yeah, I think I can make that. So, I don't know what else is happening. I can't think of anything. Kind of slowed down over the holidays, so. All right. With that, we'll adjourn and sign documents. If there's nothing else, we have a work session at 1 p.m. right here on 2023-24 values and taxes by our assessor. Mike Gordon's going to give that. It's a very good report. Anybody that's on Zoom that wants to see about the taxes, I call it the state of taxes in Morrill County. He does a really good job. It's real clear. And you'll see where all coming from, all the taxes in Morrill County are coming from, where it's going. So anyway, it's a good report. It's a good one to go to. Okay? All right. We're done.